Support for 89.7 NPR News comes from the James at Ohio State. The best outcomes for treating cancer come from early detection. The James Cancer Diagnostic Center is designed to provide rapid evaluation and a clear diagnosis to those who suspect they have cancer. Learn more at cancer.osu.edu/diagnosticcenter.
Welcome to the All Sides Reporter Roundtable, an hour where we catch up on the political news of last week and preview the week ahead. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. Three Ohio service members were among those killed in a refueling accident in the Middle East as the war rages into a third week. We'll learn more about the war in Iran, plus we'll talk about the president's visit to Ohio last week where he talked about the war and winning. We'll get to things in Iran in just a little bit, but first, it's been a tumultuous week for Ohio State University. Following Ted Carter's resignation as president a week ago, the Board of Trustees quickly picked a new president, skipping a national search and elevating one of their own to accelerate the process. And that acceleration raised some questions. Ravi Belamkonda, who serves now as Ohio State's vice president and provost, last week became the 18th president. Here's the new president in his first remarks after being appointed to the job.
I know I have much to learn, but what I do know confidently is this. We know how to win. And each of us at Ohio State, in this room and across our beautiful state, have the agency to create the Ohio State we want to inhabit.
Well, here with us to discuss more of the latest developments at Ohio State is WOSU News Director Mark Ferenchik, who has been reporting on the story. Welcome to All Sides, Mark.
Hey, Amy.
So I get the sense from the university that they wanted to generate a vibe of excitement around the new leader. They wanted to shut down questions about the process, or I guess it's a lack of process to pick him. And they want to put the whole Carter resignation in the rearview mirror. What are your thoughts on what's happening?
Well, that seems to be the case. It seems to be that, again, they didn't go to any interview process outside the university, which is what they've done in the past with the past few presidents. If you remember, again, the university spent, I think, about $340,000 when President Drake left, and then close to $500,000 after Christine Johnson left, and on those two search processes. And there was some criticism about how much money was spent then. This time they kept it in-house.
Maybe no money was spent.
Well, exactly. So again, it was only 5 days, and certainly there's a concern about just how quickly they did it. I think some people, obviously, whether they be students, professors, and others, think that there should have been a more transparent process. They should have taken their time. The fact that some people were expecting an interim president and a longer search, but they're not in this case. And it seems like they are trying to move on, and they seem to have a lot of confidence in Mr. Belamkonda. But I think some people would have wanted more of a process to have more of a say in it.
In that quote we just played that he said, he talked about that Ohio State knows how to win, and that kind of ties into, they had Ohio State's football coach Ryan Day introduce him. Was this just because everyone's happy with Ryan Day right now, so you might as well have him?
Everybody's happy with Ryan Day right now. The football coach is a stamp of approval, so to speak. Mm-hmm. It's Ohio State, right? Mm-hmm. So that's one of the people mm-hmm. they're going to bring in to try to show that there's some support for this decision. And again, Ryan Day came across the street to mm-hmm. do just that.
What else did Belamkonda emphasize in his remarks, besides saying that Ohio State's going to win this? What did he talk about?
Well, again, he was talking about just the quality of the university and trying to pursue that. He has a very interesting background. Again, he came here from Emory University. He's only been here for, again, 400 days. It's not a very long time. He was at Duke. He was the dean of the Pratt School of Engineering there. He actually got his start teaching at Case Western Reserve University up in Cleveland back in the 90s. So,
so he has some Cleveland roots there. Yeah.
Well, okay. He has some Cleveland ties, certainly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But he was talking a lot about just the, just trying to, about the excellence of the university and trying to maintain that and trying to be transparent. I think he said to me, transparent as possible. I'm not sure exactly what that means. But again, there's got to be a lot of, bridges to repair, so to speak, because of everything that happened. And he's going to be in for some interesting time, certainly.
Well, there was some criticism. The American Association of University Professors said that at the very least, faculty and students didn't get to have a say here. Here's a OSU grad student, Kendall Buchan, who said that the president's announcement last week, she's also a trustee. Here's some audio from her.
To say that this week has been a lot is an understatement, but I think we're ending on a really high note. I've been so impressed, and I know all the students have been so impressed with you since you've come here.
So that graduate student is impressed, but the university professors, the American Association of University Professors, says that they wish they were consulted. What do you make of that?
Right. I think they want some say as to who the next leader of the university should be. They want some input into what that person should be like, what they're looking for in the new leader of the university, the new president. I know that one of our reporters here, an intern, Nora Igelnik, talked to a young student who's actually in her fourth year and asked basically the same question: do you think that students should have had more of a say? And she said yes, but she says, you know, in the long run, she doesn't think students have a say anyway. Mm-hmm. And her concern is that the university is going to try to, in her words, continue to sweep things under the rug. She was happy that she was graduating after 4 years because of everything that's been happening here, just many different controversies. So, yes, the president certainly want more of a say as to what happened. Maybe they would have favored Mr. Bellamaconda, but they didn't get a chance to do that.
Do we know anything about Bellamaconda's new contract? I think I read he is going to get paid a little bit more than President Carter, right?
Correct. It says $1.4 million. Carter was paid, at least his base contract as of last September, was about $1.2 million. There in the contract, it also says that he just bought a house here, so he doesn't have to immediately move into the president's residence in Bexley. Mm-hmm. But they're going to talk about that in 2027. It's a 5-year contract that goes to 2031. Mm-hmm. So, and he has some incentives in terms of meeting certain goals and other things, benchmarks that he'll have to meet, and they'll be talking about that too. So, there are some discussions there that still need to take place, but it's a 5-year contract through 2031.
This is the Reporter Roundtable from All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about the new and old presidents of Ohio State University with WOSU's news director, Mark Barinchik. Let's back up a little bit to last Monday, just a few minutes before we went on the air with the Reporter Roundtable. A week ago, we found out that Ted Carter had resigned as president of Ohio State, citing an inappropriate relationship with someone seeking public resources to support her personal business. That was the line. In the remaining days of the week last week, more details emerge, but there's still questions. So fill us on what we've learned here. Basically, the name has come out, and it's Chrisanth Valchos, who is the host of the Call Out podcast. Mark, has anyone spoken to Chrisanth?
No, I have tried to call her, left a message, mm-hmm. emailed her, have not heard back. So it doesn't seem like anybody else has been able to reach her as well. Obviously, this came very quickly. There was an executive session a week ago Saturday. Mm-hmm. We were there. Thought it may have something to do with something that wasn't this because
right.
of all the discussion yeah. about the Wexner situation, still with the Strauss situation as well. But it was about this, obviously. And again, she had the Call Out podcast, Chrisanthi Vlachos did, here in this building. And there are questions as to what the specific public resources were that Ted Carter apparently used in connection with this podcast and the podcaster beyond just the podcast. Was there anything else that he was using university resources for? And they're doing an internal investigation about this.
Right. Now, to do the podcast, she had a contract with us here at WOSU. So we're not sure if we're the university resources because she
Correct.
Had a contract. She was paying us. So
yes, she had a contract. We're still trying to get the contract, by the way. We have to We had to get that through the university. We still haven't seen it. Mm-hmm. I think it's a year contract, but in terms of the details as to what she was able to do here in the building, you know, just the podcast itself, we're still trying to get the details, how much it was for. She had access to our building. She had a cubicle in the building. Mm-hmm. So we're trying to get the details on that.
But if it was an inappropriate relationship to gain favor for her business, I mean, if she had a contract with us, that's one thing.
Correct.
So are we thinking maybe there's more to it than that?
That's what we're thinking. There may mm-hmm. be more to it than that. What that is and the details of that we're going to have to see. But apparently, yeah, there was a trip that President Carter took with her to a conference in Colorado recently involving the Student Veterans of America conference there. But again, right now it's a lot of speculation as to what the details of that is.
And and we were also wondering early on, because it said inappropriate relationship, mm-hmm. but we were wondering if it was a romantic relationship. And the Dispatch on Friday had an exclusive story with several unnamed sources, is what it said, who said that the relationship between the two was romantic. Mm-hmm. And they detailed, one of the sources is quoted as saying they described it as more as a cavalier approach to the two of them being together. What do you make of that reporting?
Well, Sheridan Hendricks and Emma Wozniak, give them a shout out for their reporting.
Yeah.
So, right, there are questions as to you know, the what the relationship was like. Somebody described it as weirdly brazen in the story.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like it was relatively public. I guess the question was, did people have concerns about it then? Were people going to the president saying, you know, what's going on here?
Mm-hmm.
You know,
or is it all hindsight?
Well, that's just it. So mm-hmm. it may be a lot of hindsight, too. So there still has to be more, obviously, investigation into what the relationship was about in terms of, again, what public resources were being used to further her private business, how much, you know, the nature of that. Again, that's...
Whether or not they had an affair, though, mm-hmm. probably is separate from whether he misused public resources.
Correct.
Yeah.
There are two separate questions. So, mm-hmm. again, what was the nature of the public resources that were being used mm-hmm. that apparently led to this decision for him to resign once it was brought to the Board of Trustees' attention?
And there's also some money involved. Jobs Ohio had a role in this by financially supporting her podcast, which was called The Call Out Podcast. Why did Jobs Ohio say it committed up to $60,000 for 4 episodes of this podcast? And now apparently they want their money back.
Well, apparently President Carter brought it to them. So the, mm-hmm. the podcast was supposed to help link veterans with jobs, especially like electric line working jobs, which, the utilities need more line workers. So they thought it was in the best interest of the veterans to do something like that, to sponsor this. So, but only one of those 4 podcasts was completed for $15,000, but they had already upfronted $60,000 for that. Mm-hmm. And now they're looking at ways to claw that back. Now, mm-hmm. how difficult that's going to be at this point,
yeah.
we'll see. But that was supposedly the reason why they decided to sponsor this.
Mm-hmm. Let's pivot back to the new Ohio State president just for the couple minutes we have left. Looking at some of the challenges President Bellum Khanda faces, there's the issue with Les Wexner and the Strauss sexual abuse case. There's the unhappiness with former President Carter, who quickly complied with anti-DEI initiatives. There are 400 requests out there to remove Wexner's name from university buildings. What did Bellum Khanda say about all of this that he has to deal with?
It's a lot. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's just a lot of questions. And obviously, he was well prepared to answer these questions. I mean, for DEI, he was talking about he still is very committed to intellectual diversity. I asked him directly if he's going to try to bring DEI programs back, considering Senate Bill 1, and he didn't say that was going to happen, but he said, you know, that it's very valuable to have a plurality of opinions at the university here, and he's committed to that principle. When it comes to Strauss, he was talking about how, he certainly has sympathy for the victims of the abuse, mm-hmm. And he was seems like he certainly wants to work on getting more resolution to the lawsuits. There have been many settled already. He definitely wants to settle more of those lawsuits. Mm-hmm. With the Wexners, he was talking about how generous they've been in the past. It seems like there's going to be discussions of with those requests, but certainly he's not committed to doing anything yet. So his answers were vague in a lot of these mm-hmm. cases, but in at this point, you don't expect them to be anything more than that, I guess. So we will see what happens as, again, he has to rebuild a lot of trust. And considering what's happened and with all of these other things going on, it's not going to be an easy task.
The chairman of the Ohio State University Board of Trustees, John, is it Ziegler or Zeiger?
Zeiger.
John Zeiger. During Thursday's meeting, he reacted this way to President Carter's abrupt departure.
The board was surprised, deeply disappointed, and really saddened to learn of that situation and distressed to consider its consequences to the university.
I mean, the optics here, it seems like we're having a revolving door of presidents. Carter was here about 2 years, Christina Johnson about 2 years. So what do you think about whenever you think about the future of Ohio State and what, you know, where they're going from here?
Yeah, it has been, and Drake was here for what, 6 years,
six
I
years,
think? Yeah,
yeah.
So yeah, it's been, and Karen Holbrook for, what, 5 years, I think.
Well, Gordon Gee, 2.0 was before that, too.
Correct,
yeah.
Yes. Longer terms, right.
Yeah.
I think there's probably some concern about the stability of leadership, and that may be one reason why they brought him in. It seems like they're pretty impressive. Again, he's only been here since the beginning of 2025.
Mm-hmm.
So he's built some sort of a track record here. Again, they seem to want to just move ahead mm-hmm. Without a whole lot of discussion, and we'll see how much that may either hurt them in the future. But right now, again, I think they're just saying he's the leader. We'll see where we go, and again, we'll see what happens.
Yeah, well... former President Carter was on this show several times, at least twice a year. So
yes.
We'll see whenever President Belanconda wants to join us.
That is right.
Well, Mark, I want to thank you for your reporting. We've been talking with WOSU News Director Mark Ferencik. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
And coming up, we will convene the reporter roundtable. We will talk about three members of the Air National Guard who were killed in the Middle East and President Trump's visit to Cincinnati. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
This is Tanya Mosley, co-host of Fresh Air. You'll see your favorite actors, directors, and comedians on late-night TV shows or YouTube, but what you get with Fresh Air is a deep dive. Spend some quality time with people like Billie Eilish, Questlove, Ariana Grande, Stephen Colbert, and so many more. We ask questions you won't hear asked anywhere else. Listen to the Fresh Air podcast from NPR and WHYY.
You're listening to All Sides in the Weekly Reporter Roundtable, an hour where we talk all things Ohio politics. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. With us in the studio, we have Karen Kassler, Bureau Chief for the Ohio Public Radio Statehouse News Bureau. Welcome, Karen.
Glad to be here.
Shane Stegmiller, reporter for Hannah News Service. Welcome back, Shane.
Top of the morning to you a day early.
Oh, that's right. All right. And then Susan Tebben, reporter for the Ohio Capital Journal. Welcome back, Susan.
Thanks. I can't follow that.
Yeah. Are you Irish?
Yes.
All right. Well, there you go. That I'm not. That fits. Okay. Governor DeWine, to make things more serious, I'm sorry, I have to pivot. Governor DeWine announced on Friday that three Ohio service members were among six that died when their military aircraft was involved in a refueling accident in Iraq. They were members of Ohio's National Guard, the 121st refueling wing. It's stationed here in Columbus. Among those killed, Tyler Simmons, 28, of Columbus, Captain Curtis Angst, 30 years old, from Columbus, and Captain Seth Koval of Stoutsville, which is in Fairfield County, 38 years old. Do we know exactly what happened with the accident or anything like that? It was a refueling effort in Iraq, right?
It was a refueling effort, and as far as we know, I think they've said that there was not any. They weren't taking fire during this or anything like that. It sounds like it was just a routine accident.
Yeah. So Governor DeWine posted on X that he and Fran are deeply saddened by the news. Others in Ohio have expressed their condolences. We've heard from many lawmakers. But this has a way of bringing the war home, making it real. And also 2,500 Marines are heading to the region right now. Their deployment is at odds with President Trump's public statements about the war. Here is what President Trump said last week when he visited Ohio. This happened just a couple days before the fatal crash.
I mean, for them, it's a war. For us, it's turned out to be easier than we thought. But think of it. They had thousands of missiles, 8,000 missiles. We got many of them before they got to launch. They have drones all over the place. We got many now. We're knocking out the drone plants, as you know, going fast. They started talking about mines, so we hit 28 mine ships as of this moment, 28.
So, and he also mentioned in his remarks that gas prices were high, but not as high as some feared, and it's only a temporary issue. So, Shane, Ohioans are certainly seeing higher gas prices right now.
Yes, they are. I believe that, what was it, about 60 or 70 cents? Ohio was definitely in the top 10 for spikes. It's kind of evened out a little bit. Around here, it seemed like it hit around 349, and now it's kind of gone back into the 330s somewhere. So we'll see if it stays like this. There's, I think, still a lot of uncertainty going on in the region, especially through the strait there near Iran, whether or not that's going to keep the pressure up, especially as we go into the summer driving season, more people are traveling, they start reformatting the gasoline. So it's more a little more environmentally friendly for, you know, the smog and such. So I guess time will tell.
And we're about the same as our surrounding states. Michigan and Pennsylvania are higher, but I think that's pretty typical. Those who are thinking about traveling in the next couple of weeks, there's that to consider, I guess.
Karen, what do you make of the fact that President Trump came to Ohio last week in the midst of this war, but he came to Cincinnati, he toured Thermo Fisher Chemical, a pharmaceutical biotech company. He came to talk about his Trump RX plan. Why do you think he picked Ohio and to come here during this start of the war?
Not really sure, but I think it really did kind of throw some plans into disarray in terms of the state of the state that was supposed to be happening on Wednesday as well. And from knowing what was going on at the State House at the time, you know, there was the question about whether do you go ahead with the state of the state when the president is in the state, and certainly some other lawmakers, including Governor DeWine, would want to go, or do you move it? And if you move it, do you push it back or forward? And so they decided to push it to Tuesday, so the day before, and that took a little bit of maneuvering and bringing in some extra air conditioning units because the State House is still struggling with its heating and cooling system. It's very warm in our office as well as in other offices in the building. So I'm not sure exactly, though, why he picked Ohio, other than, you know, Ohio does have a competitive governor's race, it looks like. We're still waiting for some really good national polling on it, but there's that, and Trump has endorsed Vivek Ramaswamy, one of the Republican candidates for governor, and then of course we have a U.S. Senate race, which John Husted, the sitting Republican U.S. senator, was testifying that day via Zoom at the First Energy trial, and so, you know, that's, I think Trump has endorsed him as well, but that certainly was another story that was kind of on the headlines.
Yeah, busy week last week. Go ahead,
yeah,
Shane.
And the other thing too is I don't know how much congressional races might have played into it, but, you know, he's very concerned about whether or not the Republicans will hold onto the House after this year. You have that first congressional district in Cincinnati that's held by Democrat Greg Landsman, and there's a pretty competitive primary on the Republican side on who's going to take him on after they redrew it and they made it a little more Republican friendly. I don't believe he's endorsed in that race. Mm-hmm. And then in Northern Kentucky, he's been feuding with Northern Kentucky Representative Thomas Massey. He's endorsed his opponent. Mm. He made some comments against him. I'm not sure how much of that played into it, but it definitely gave him a chance to kind of take some shots at Massey.
Could be all of the above, that's for sure.
Yeah. And Susan, he came here to talk about Trump RX, which is aimed at lowering drug prices, but not everyone agrees that it's actually doing that. I think it depends on the drug and depends on the day. Mm. We are devoting our Wednesday 10 o'clock hour to a show about drug prices at the national level and here in Ohio. But Susan, what do you make of just, you know, him coming here to talk about drug prices, which is one of those pocketbook issues all about affordability, but then also he had to address the war?
Yeah, I mean, healthcare obviously is going to be a top issue in this election season because, you know, Amy Acton is talking about it. Everybody's talking about it as being one of the major issues that we want to talk about. Affordable healthcare. What does healthcare even look like with the subsidies being gone away? So I think it makes sense that he would come, you know, and try to build up some support or, you know, get his two cents out about his pharmaceutical plans and healthcare in general, and just trying to, you know, make sure that people know he's out there and this is what he's going to do. So,
on the same day that President Trump visited Ohio, his administration also appealed to the U.S. Supreme Court to let the administration end the temporary protected status, TPS, of Haitians, thousands here in Ohio and across the country. Karen, what do you, this ongoing legal battle, it has a lot of people in limbo. Is it a coincidence that they appealed to the Supreme Court on the same day he was in Ohio?
I don't think so. I think this was coming. Mm-hmm. But yeah, this is something that Trump's talked about. This is the natural, I think, progression of all of these TPS cases have ended up going through the court system. So you're right that there are a lot of people in Western Ohio in particular, but also in Columbus, who are in limbo, wondering whether the TPS will be extended, whether they'll be able to stay, or whether they're going to have to go back. I mean, we're talking about a country that the U.S. State Department has told Americans not to travel to. DeWine has talked about how dangerous it is in Haiti because he has contacts there. He had a school that was named for his late daughter there. And so, you know, there's and the arguments that or the state, the ruling the judge in the lower court put out was very interesting in terms of why she came to the decision to not go ahead and allow TPS to expire. And she also talked about getting death threats over this. So it's obviously a very it's a difficult situation.
Yeah. And the U.S. Supreme Court's already still they're still considering the birthright citizenship issue. Mm-hmm. So it makes sense that we would have these issues keep, you know, the Trump administration would keep coming with these because we're still waiting on to see how the court would go with the birthright citizenship. So might as well add some things, you know, before they've made a decision. That way they can say, you know, before a precedent has been set, that we have these other issues to add into it.
And this follows the pattern of the Trump administration where when they've had a lower court ruling against them, they're going directly to the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court's shown that it's willing to take up these issues rather than make them go through the whole process.
And Governor DeWine has repeatedly expressed support for the Haitian community in Ohio, especially those in Springfield. Do you think, I mean, I know he was at the President Trump event. I wonder if he had a chance to say anything to the president about that.
I don't know that at this point it makes a difference because the legal wheels are turning here. I know that the advocates in Springfield who have been working with Haitians are actually having a press conference in about a half an hour or so to talk about their efforts to continue to help the community and also how some members of the Haitian community are going to Washington this week to be there, I guess, when a decision is expected. So it's been a long road for these folks who have gone through the whole false and racist rumors about pets in Springfield and then this. It's been tough. And DeWine has talked extensively about what would be the impact on the economy if indeed TPS was expired and these folks had to leave because they work. They're working in businesses in the Springfield area, and there were a lot of them that say that they could not function without those folks.
It's important to note, too, that those TPSs were given because they were coming from a country that had significant violence and they had, you know, and none of that, as far as we know, has changed or significantly improved. So we're not looking at this being a situation where they're impacting negatively impacting Springfield or anything. So, you know, a lot of advocates are saying, well, there's no reason that they should leave the TPSs until the country's improved that they came from. So what's the problem with keeping them there if they're adding to the economy and they're not, you know, doing anything wrong?
And DeWine has even said Haiti is one of the most dangerous countries in the world. And so to send some of these folks back there, and some of them have been here for quite a while. Right. So it would be, it'd be very, very dangerous.
Well, we, along with a lot of people, will wait for that Supreme Court ruling. You're listening to the Weekly Reporter Roundtable. With us this week is Karen Kassler from Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau, and Susan Tebben from Ohio Capital Journal, and Shane Stegmiller from Hannah News Service. So let's pivot and talk about the state of the state. Governor DeWine had to move his state of the state, which Karen mentioned earlier. It was previously scheduled for last Wednesday. He scrambled and moved it to Tuesday ahead of President Trump's visit. Karen, you've watched a lot of these speeches over the years. What stood out to you about Governor DeWine's last State of the State address?
I think this is my 22nd one to say. No, that's not right, because there weren't State of the State speeches in 20 and 21. So
it's your 20th.
20th, yes. There you go.
Oh, what a great anniversary.
Yes, absolutely. You know, DeWine has used his State of the State to announce policies before, which, I mean, like, former Governor John Kasich would use the speech more as kind of a look back, it seemed like. But DeWine has announced, like, this Ohio C Vision Screening Program and the Department of Children and Youth. He did that in a State of the State. So I think a lot of folks were expecting at least some kind of maybe legacy project or something that would survive after his administration is gone, because this was his final speech. He did talk about getting lawmakers to pass some bills related to AI and kind of reining in artificial intelligence. And he wants a primary seatbelt law, which the last time he asked for that in 2024, that went nowhere. So I think he didn't say anything about the death penalty, which a lot of us, I think, would like to hear what his thoughts are. He keeps saying he's going to say something soon. And he didn't say anything about H2 Ohio, which
surprising. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it was just a passing reference, but Speaker Matt Huffman had told reporters at one point that he knew he and DeWine had been talking about creating a funding stream for H2 Ohio through a bond issue. And so I think a lot of us expected to hear about that, but he did not choose to do it in the speech.
Yeah, Susan, his speech had a lot about education, a lot about children. Did your reading of the speech mean that he was trying to just cement his legacy with children-focused issues?
Yeah, I mean, that's been kind of his legacy, is talking about children, foster care system, children, child care and all that stuff. But there has been actually a lot of discussion about what was missing from the speech in terms of child care, in terms of public education funding, in terms of all of those things. So, yeah, he did talk about that. And he talked about infant mortality as well, saying that it was the lowest it's been in 20 years. Still not great with the rankings compared to other states, but he did talk about that. So there were definitely things in there that he was touting his record on that, but also some things that advocates said, you know, we wanted to hear a little more about that, especially child care.
Shane, what did House Speaker Matt Huffman and Senate President Rob McCauley say? They're both Republicans. What did they say about the speech afterward?
A lot of the questions to them were kind of about the proposals that he threw out, because there were some things that Karen mentioned, that there's some bills that he once passed. The AI as a result, the AI for like child pornography, that you can't use AI to create child pornography. Some of that stuff, McCauley said that Senate President Rob McCauley said that he's sound like that would move, that he wasn't sure why it was still in committee, that so he made it sound like it. But the other ideas that DeWine threw out, they seemed a little skeptical of, especially the primary seatbelt law. Huffman kind of questioned, is this going to change behavior if we have a primary seatbelt law? Because some people just don't want to do it. They just don't want to follow the law. And, you know, when you have 87% of people who wear their seatbelts automatically, if you pass a primary seatbelt law, is that going to bring it up to 90? Is it really worth passing it? And there are some concerns that whether or not you pass a primary seatbelt law, which for those who don't know, that means if a cop sees you not wearing your seatbelt, he can initiate a traffic stop for that reason. Currently, it's a secondary law, so he can't stop you for that reason. He has to stop you for some other reason. And then if he sees you not wearing a seatbelt, he can write you a ticket for that. There are some concerns, especially among minority communities, of whether or not that's another reason for a cop to pull you over and create a situation. So there's a lot of concerns that make it seem like that's not going to move as easily.
Do a lot of states have primary seatbelt laws? Are we just behind?
Yes, a lot of states do. And DeWine even mentioned a couple of them, including Republican states like Florida. So I think he's always been a road and highway safety guy. I remember a couple years ago there was talk about raising speed limits, and he said absolutely he would veto something like that. So this is, and again, this is not the first time he's called for this, but I think Republican leadership made it pretty clear that they have serious concerns.
And there has been skepticism among Republican leadership among about stuff like this before. I mean, the use of cell phones was a secondary violation for a while, and they're kept coming up with bills of let's make this a primary violation, and they never moved on it, and then DeWine pushed on it, and finally they passed it, and even Huffman said he wasn't a big fan of that, but enough members of his caucus came around to it and wanted it, and that's when he was Senate president, this is when it happened. So they finally brought it to the floor and passed it.
And DeWine used that as an example, or the distracted driving law, saying that that's an example of how the law is a motivator, and that if you pass a law, then you will motivate people who the 12-13% whatever who are not wearing seatbelts, you'll motivate them to start wearing seatbelts. But
And Huffman and McCauley expressed skepticism exactly that. They don't think that's going to change anybody's who's not already wearing a seatbelt. They don't think that's going to change anybody's opinion on wearing seatbelts just from those 12-13%.
Okay. Well, and then Karen, Steve Stivers, the executive director of the Ohio Chamber of Commerce, commented on DeWine's final speech. He called it great, and then he gave a nod to whoever becomes the next governor.
You know, no matter who's elected, they're definitely going to have to focus on jobs, and we're going to work with them to understand why that's important.
So what do you guys make of, you know, the two leading candidates out there, Vivek Ramaswamy, Dr. Amy Acton, have been talking a lot about jobs. So I feel like the main thing to come out of DeWine's speech was about seatbelts. But really what we need to be talking about is jobs here. Shane, do you agree that's going to be the big thing in the governor's race?
Jobs, and Amy Acton's also making a big case on affordability. I mean, that was a big issue in the 2024 election and the presidential race. Democrats are kind of seizing on this because, you know, Republicans and especially President Trump pushed that as one of their main messages in the 2024 election. Now they've been in charge of all branches of the federal government for a year. And now Democrats can say, well, we're not in charge and things are still not affordable. So Amy Acton is going to focus on that.
Did DeWine talk about affordability in a State of the State?
I don't believe he did.
Okay.
And Vivek is going to definitely has been talking a lot about jobs and doing stuff to make jobs come to Ohio more, doing stuff like, you know, getting rid of taxes. And
I will say DeWine did mention in his speech about career tech. So he tried to, you know, boost up that we should be working on improving career tech, getting people into career tech, recruiting people to be in career tech so we can create those workforce jobs. Mm-hmm. Then people will stay in Ohio and do these jobs.
That still relates to education, though. Yeah. It was all about kids. Yeah.
Well, he did call out, I think, three Ohio companies that have located in from California to Ohio. But that was more like the looking back section as opposed to the looking forward section. I think, you know, Vivek Ramaswamy, we've heard him talk about eliminating the income tax, which DeWine has doubted whether that has actually caused companies to set up shop in Ohio. Mm-hmm. And Ramaswamy's also talked about dramatic cuts to property tax. That's another thing we didn't hear about in DeWine's State of the State, which is something that a lot of people are really concerned about at this point. Then when it comes to Amy Acton, she has kind of talked about tax cuts, but has been kind of vague, pushing a little bit more toward some specifics here. But one of the things that I've heard her talk about a couple of times is corruption and maybe the tie between corruption and affordability or something like that. And that's something that Democrats have tried to use in the past that just has not really resonated with voters. And so I don't know if affordability is going to be a bigger part of what Democrats talk about, though I can imagine that with the first energy trial and some of these other things that corruption is still going to play a role.
Well, I'm going to take your segue. This is the Reporter Roundtable from All Sides. And coming up after the break, we're going to talk about the first energy trial and the testimony of Senator John Husted. That is when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News. You're listening to All Sides and the Weekly Reporter Roundtable. I'm your host, Amy Jarovich. And still with us, we have Susan Tebben, reporter for the Ohio Capital Journal, Shane Stegmiller, reporter for Hannah News Service, and Karen Kassler, bureau chief for the Ohio Public Radio Statehouse News Bureau. Closing arguments are set for today in the first energy trial, which is taking place in Akron. This is the corruption trial for former First Energy executives Chuck Jones and Michael Dowling. And the biggest name to testify was Senator John Husted, who gave testimony last week by remote video from Washington, D.C. Husted was serving as lieutenant governor before becoming senator. So at the time when all this is happening, he was actually lieutenant governor-elect, too. That's what they were talking about. He is not accused of any wrongdoing. So, Karen, if he's not accused of any wrongdoing necessarily, why was Husted called as a defense witness?
I think the defense was hoping to establish that First Energy preferred somebody besides the late Sam Randazzo as Public Utilities Commission chair, which they preferred. The testimony was that they preferred a Columbus attorney named Jason Rayfield, who actually testified before that, yes, First Energy wanted me in that PUCO chair position. And so Husted was kind of backing that up. And he was also talking a little bit about the process that created the process that he was involved in to select a PUCO chair. Because when DeWine and Husted, they won in 2018, when they came into office, they had, I think it was two seats on the Public Utilities Commission to fill, including the chairmanship. And Husted said in his testimony that it was part of his job, essentially, to gather information about candidates for the PUCO chair to give to DeWine, who would make the selection, and then he would be confirmed by the Senate.
And this is related to a dinner that happened in December of 2018 when Husted was lieutenant governor-elect. The dinner happened at the Columbus Athletic Club. I don't remember, Susan, I don't remember what I had for dinner last Tuesday. So, but is Husted supposed to remember this dinner?
Right. And I mean, there's been reporting done, I know, by Morgan Trout at WWS about his calendar, having meetings scheduled and things like that. But yeah, I'm thinking about lunch coming up. I don't remember what I had. So
yeah,
it's tough with those kinds of things. And you don't know whether people are testifying, you know, to the best of their knowledge is what they're supposed to do. So it's hard to say, you know, one way or the other.
And this was kind of a chaotic time because when you come into office, you have a lot of work to do. And this is what Husted
you got to hire a lot of people. Yeah.
And this is what Husted talked a little bit about, that the time frame that this dinner happened, December of 2018, this was, you know, a month after they'd won the election, a month before the taking office. And there was a lot going on. So he did a lot of I don't recall and I can't remember and, you know, things like that, which I think is pretty well expected. But I think one of the most interesting things about this was to watch some of the clashes between the prosecution and the defense, which has been happening throughout this trial. And I don't think that that's completely unusual. But there was a point at which the prosecution, represented by Ohio Attorney General, Assistant Attorney General Matt Meyer. He said,
"Actually, we have
yes,
that audio.
Yes, go ahead.
All right.
Yes,
so this
yes.
is from your story. This is Assistant Attorney General Matt Meyer.
If it requires disclosure, that should have been done.
Okay. And you would agree with me that Ohioans shouldn't have to tolerate a chair who is compromised by secret financial dealings.
Objection, Your Honor.
With
objection.
I haven't finished my question.
It's already objectionable.
So, and, yeah. So are they fighting the whole time?
Yeah. And then at the end, when Meyer asked Husted, and this is a quote, "You would want anyone involved in compromising the integrity of a PUCR chair to be held accountable, wouldn't you?" Which is basically asking him, you want the two guys on trial to be convicted, right? And the defense was really upset about that, called it unbelievable. After Husted disconnected, the defense asked for the case to be dismissed, which of course it wasn't. But the judge did kind of come down on Meyer, saying, you know, this line of questioning was a concern, I guess.
A concern, so, yeah. Okay. And I was going to ask you if Governor DeWine had to testify about this, but if they're in closing arguments, I guess not.
Yeah, and again, nobody had accused. There have been no charges, no accusations of wrongdoing at Husted or DeWine. And so I think, you know, the Husted testimony was interesting. It was certainly headline-making, but I'm not sure how much it really provided in terms of there were no bombshell revelations or anything like that. So
yeah. And Senator Husted also made a comment last week in a video that went kind of viral about people living in poverty that got quite a bit of pushback on social media. In the video, he referred to people living in poverty, saying they don't know how to navigate real life. Have we heard any more reaction to that, or is that going to be just a blip that goes away?
Well, I think that took the first energy testimony kind of off the top of the headlines there, but I can imagine that's going to be something that we'll see in, you know, Sherrod Brown's ads or something.
Yeah, I think you can imagine what people felt about that, especially people that work in hunger advocacy and, you know, poverty stuff. It's just not the way they feel the world works. So
was he doing an interview, or was it, do you know what the video, where it came from?
I think it was an
interview. Yeah. Was it Breitbart?
Yeah. I think that's right. That
it
sounds
was,
right. Yeah, it, was Breitbart.
It was a Sutherland Institute podcast defending ideas on March 10th.
Okay.
A conservative podcast, Adam.
So he was on a podcast, one of those podcasts with a video, and someone pulled out that clip. Right. Got it. You're listening to the All Sides Weekly Reporter Roundtable. We're talking with Shane Stegmiller from Hannah News Service, Susan Tebbin from the Ohio Capital Journal, and Karen Kassler from the Ohio Public Radio Statehouse News Bureau. I wanted to ask about ranked choice voting. There's a bill to prohibit the use of ranked choice voting, and it's reached the governor's desk. But it has, Shane, has DeWine signed it yet?
I haven't checked my email this morning.
Okay.
As far as I know, he has not signed it. Mm-hmm. I think he's indicated he is open to it. There's been a late push.
So it's to ban ranked choice voting.
It would ban ranked choice voting. It's used in a number of other states, Alaska, I believe. New York City, I think, uses ranked choice voting. And it's kind of a complex system where you kind of write down the order of your preferences, and then they kind of do a whole process where they go through and they eliminate candidates based on how many votes they're getting until you have a clear cut, somebody getting more than 50%. This is actually it's a bipartisan bill, but most of the Democrats voted against it. Senator Bill DeMora, who is from Columbus and has been heavily involved in Democratic politics, he helped co-sponsored it. And the argument is it's a very confusing, very involved process. Voters might not always understand, like, why did the person who got the most votes not win the election? And there's also, it can take a lot longer because they have to go through the whole process, so people don't know who the winner is. So Ohio doesn't use this system.
Right. They're just trying to ban it before. Because there were a few smaller municipalities that wanted to.
Lakewood, I think, was looking at it. There's a couple other ones. I think it had been used in the past. Cincinnati might have used it like 100 years ago.
Yes.
So it's been used before, and they went away from it. But I don't believe many places do it. And there was a pushback from some of the locals who want to explore this, because there's been a push by people that this is a way to get around, you know, the very partisan nature of our system. The other one that Senator Blessing from Cincinnati kind of threw out too, though, would be like, you know, basically an open primary where the top two vote getters move on to the general election. That hasn't been explored, though, in Ohio with any legislation.
Okay.
So, yeah, it's reached DeWine's desk. There's been a late push for people to get him to veto it, but he's kind of indicated that he is open to signing it. I think he's also indicated it's very complex and time-consuming process.
All right. Well, we're down to 2 minutes left. Last week was a very busy week, as we just discussed, a lot going on. Is this week going to be a busy week as well? What are you going to cover this week, Shane?
So the Senate is out, I believe, this week. They are not meeting. So it's mainly House committees and House session. So it's all on that side. It's not going to be the, you know, everybody running around. It's like my boss likes to say, rolling, you know, right. Going on roller skate on ice floes or anything like that. But it will still be busy, and I expect something to pop. Something always does.
All right. And then, Karen, we have the closing arguments today.
Yeah, closing statements in First Energy. But that could go, I mean, I don't, the judge said deliberations she doesn't expect until tomorrow. So this is going to be a long day of closing statements because it's a complicated case. And so she's giving the prosecution time to make the case, the defense, both lawyers, and then rebuttal from the prosecution. So it's going to be a long day.
And after a more than month trial, I'm guessing the jury's going to have a few questions, probably.
Probably.
Probably. All right. And Susan, is there anything in particular you're working on?
Yeah, we're getting started on election coverage because, you know, that's coming
up.
We've got so many election races to go. And so, and we've got a May primary coming up in not very long. So I'm going to get started on those.
All right. May primary in less than 2 months, right?
Yep.
And early voting starts April 6th or 7th. I mean, soon.
The military starts even sooner.
Yeah. Yep.
All right. We're going to have to look that up. All right. I want to say thank you to Susan Tevin, reporter for the Ohio Capital Journal. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Shane Stegmiller, reporter for Hannah News Service. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
And Karen, bureau chief with the Ohio Public Radio Statehouse News Bureau. Thank you.
You're welcome. It's great to be here.
And this has been All Sides on 89.7 NPR News.
This is Tanya Mosley, co-host of Fresh Air. You'll see your favorite actors, directors, and comedians on late-night TV shows or YouTube. But what you get with Fresh Air is a deep dive. Spend some quality time with people like Billie Eilish, Questlove, Ariana Grande, Stephen Colbert, and so many more. We ask questions you won't hear asked anywhere else. Listen to the Fresh Air podcast from NPR and WHYY.